Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with the samples. I've been battling allergies for years now. Let me tell you, they've been a real ordeal in my life. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to ClaritinD.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, gang? Welcome to The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mirshazadeh. I'm so pumped to have you here with me. Now listen, The Greatness Machine, we're about two things. Number one, people who are living their passions. And number two, those who are creating greatness in the world and doing both of these things despite the odds against them. Each episode, we're going to feature interviews with game changers, business leaders, you know, telling us their origin stories, what made them tick, what got them to where they are now. Why? So it can help you step into your greatness within your life, your business, and your career. Occasionally, you might hear a few solo episodes from myself, moi as I say, as I leverage my 20 years of entrepreneurship as a CEO and founder to help you grow and level up in your journey to scale your life and your business. So come be a fly on the wall, enjoy the conversation, and I'm stoked to have you here with me. What's up, everybody? Welcome to today's episode of The Greatness Machine. Oh, man, I just finished interviewing Sam Ushio. What a badass. We talk about so many cool things. We talk about Ikigai. He is the chief Ikigai officer. We talk about Ikigai, the Japanese art of living a better life. We go into deep into engagement, stakeholder versus shareholder value, 7-year cycles of life, living a life of purpose, and so much more. This is such a great episode. Stay tuned. Guys, welcome to today's episode of The Greatness Machine. I'm your host, Darius Mirshazadeh, and boy, do we have a special guest. My main man, Sam Ushio, is in the house. What's up, Sam?
What's going on, Darius?
Oh, man. I'm just living the dream, baby.
Living the dream. I love it. Tell me more. What's the dream these days?
You know, it's all about Ikigai, baby. It's all about, you know, passion and purpose and talent and what people will pay me for all combined into one.
Good man.
You know, so do you mind if I do a minute of housekeeping and then we're going to jump into and yours? So listeners, if you're not new here, you know what we're all about. We're all about two things: people living their passions and those creating greatness in the world. If you are new, that's what we're about. And I am so pumped to get to have Sam on the show. I'm so pumped I pushed his show up. He was supposed to go next month and I'm like, no, man, you got to go now. I want to do your show sooner than later. So Sam and I, we met through a mutual friend, one of my closest friends, Dan Newhall. We were talking because Dan knows that I'm like a core value evangelist. I love Gallup Strength Finders. I'm all about purpose-driven organizations. Built my last company that way. And he's like, and Dan and I are talking about doing potentially a business together, which is around in the financial services space. And he said, man, we should have a conversation with Sam. You got to meet Sam Ushio. He's doing some really cool stuff when it comes to, you know, purpose-driven organizations. He's got this cool platform. And so we had this call and it was like, I'm like, hey, Dan, go take a backseat. Sam and I, we're going to talk. And I mean, Dan gets really fired up about this stuff, but it was you and I were just getting after it, just talking about strengths and Gallup Strength Finder and purpose-driven organizations and core values and about your platform and all these amazing things you're doing. And I was like, I really like this guy. And so I invited you to be on the show because I thought what you're doing is really interesting. You obviously, your formal bios right now, you are the chief Ikigai officer at Connect3X, which is a people platform that embeds well-being into the rhythm of business, which I believe is one of the more important ways to create change in the world. And you know, you have this massive background really around organizational development, and but specifically in the financial services space where both you and I kind of came up. and yours in asset management, mine in a particular part of asset management. That's the boring shit nobody even cares about. Like everyone who's listening just fell asleep when I said the words asset management. It's funny. It's like the first part of the word asset's great. It's the second part that screws it up. Like I love ass, but asset. It's like, oh, he's talking about asset. Damn it. No one cares anymore. You know, I was in the mortgage space for a long time. So I still kind of am a little bit because I coach mortgage companies. And I remember I went, maybe it was a decade ago, and I was talking to, I would watch people's faces when they asked me what I did for a living. And I'm like this super like intuitive, somatic intuitive. And so I would start saying, I'm in the mortgage, and I'd watch their eyes glaze over. Before I got done with the word mortgage, they're like, boring.
It's like the jukebox scratched.
Yeah, it's just like basically their head said yes, and their face said I don't care. And so like when I tell you on your podcast, yeah, it's really funny. No one gives a shit about financial services. They just want to know that it makes them money. So, what people do love is the stuff that you and I mutually care about, which is the people side. How do you create a more engaged team to create greatness, right? To create amazingness. But if you don't mind, you know, I gave kind of my funny, you know, awkward description of what you do, but give us your, we love origin stories here at the Greatness Machine. Why don't you give us kind of some of your origin stories? Take us kind of back to, you know, where you're from and how you came up in this world and how you got to what you're doing right now in the world of Ikigai. And before we go there, actually, I don't want to dive too deep in shallow dive. What the hell is the, I know what it means, but listeners might be like, what the hell is Ikigai?
Yeah. So I'll hit that. First, I just want to say thanks. Thanks for having me on here. Shout out to Dan for connecting the two of us, because you're right. He was saying, Darius, you got to meet this guy, Darius. And when we finally connected, it was like lightning in a bottle. So Ikigai. Ikigai is a derivative of two Japanese words, Iki, which means life, Gai, which means value or worth. No direct English translation. It can be interpreted as your reason for being, purpose. It's been empirically linked to, longevity, creativity, productivity, happiness, all the good stuff. Roughly about a 1,000-year-old Japanese concept, phrase, philosophy. The origin story, the starting point, I grew up in a small town in western Nebraska called Alliance, Nebraska. Shout out to Alliance. It's known as... it's known for Carhenge, which is a replica of Stonehenge made out of cars.
So oh, I know.
A spot to hit on your summer vacation tour, the Darius Greatness summer vacation tour. That's where I grew up. And, you know, spent my childhood there, went to undergrad at the University of Nebraska, and kind of launched myself into financial services in 1999 when... If you recall, for those of you who do recall, in 1999, market was pretty hot. There was .com everything, and started off in marketing strategy, kind of, you know, dipping my toe in the water in financial services in an environment that is at the time felt unprecedented. I think since then we've gone through a couple cycles. So anyway, roughly 20 years in financial services, two different organizations, the bulk of that time in financial services was at a global asset management company where I led a team of management consultants. We coached approximately 1,000 financial advisors per year. And in doing that work, I started to notice that the word growth was everywhere in the industry. It was everything that we were saying, always was tied to money, always about growing the portfolio, the P&L, the valuation of the enterprise. And I was observing and leading this team and also working with some of our larger clients that oftentimes personal growth was being compromised on the quest for financial growth. Observing it, started to realize and seeing it within my own pattern of decision making. And that led me to take the entrepreneurial leap in 2017 at the ripe age of 40 years old in a month and a day. And that kind of led me on this journey. So the journey, so I'm based in Seattle, went to business school at the University of Washington, leaned pretty heavily on the Seattle community in the business network to explore. So I refer to that as my second adolescence, right? This kind of opportunity to go through learning and all over again at this mid stage of life, and was finding these topics in interviewing leaders at organizations, right? So Microsoft, Amazon, Nordstrom, Costco, Zillow, Gates Foundation, these large household brand names, getting in front of the leader and saying, what do you do that leads toward innovation? And you know, how does that manifest in terms of your leadership style, your leadership approach? And I was finding topics like emotional intelligence, systems thinking, human-centered design, positive psychology, a lot of stuff at this stage in life that was completely new to me. The stuff I was doing before was more traditional blocking and tackling, you know, management consulting type of stuff. And it was just, it was a burst of energy. So saw that as the path to connect these two worlds between financial growth and personal growth. And throughout that entrepreneurial journey, came across a very unique personal story about my great grandparents, and in particular, my great grandmother, that had worked tirelessly to preserve the legacy of a 1,200-year-old Shinto shrine in Japan, and really brought this concept of ikigai to life. And so, realizing that I have this background in change management, what would it look like if I dove deep into researching this concept of ikigai? And then put purpose-driven change management in front of that. The last thing I'll mention is essentially that led me in this, you know, this creative phase where I was doing things like virtual friends trip during COVID and purpose speakeasies for midlife professionals, because no midlifer wants to say, hey, everything's great on paper, but inside I feel unfulfilled. Well-being Wednesdays, just a lot of experiments to essentially refine and hone this ecosystem that now finds its way into Connect3x, which is a people platform that embeds well-being into the rhythm of business.
I love it, man. I want to take a step back, because I think that you said something really interesting, that there's a tension that I think exists in the world right now. And there's something that I've said that I'm going to go to what I say in a second. First and foremost, you mentioned that, you know, I work for these companies. We coached all these financial professionals. What did you say? It was 10,000?
1,000 a year.
1,000 a year for how many years?
Yeah. I was in that seat for about 8 years. But when we started, we were doing about 80 per year. So we were at 1,000 per year for probably the last 5 years.
Yeah. So you guys did 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 people more than likely, right?
Right.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When I needed to expand my team, I wanted more than just resumes. I wanted quality professionals who were the perfect fit for our culture and goals. And LinkedIn Jobs delivered just that. LinkedIn Jobs isn't just another job board. LinkedIn Jobs has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive. Hiring is easy when you have that many quality candidates. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get qualified candidate within 24 hours. They understand the challenges small businesses face, which is why they're constantly innovating to make the hiring process easier. And just recently, LinkedIn launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions in a snap. Trust me, I've used it. It's like having a personal assistant to guide you through the process, making it quicker and more efficient than ever before. And let me tell you, it made all the difference. With LinkedIn's help, I've been able to attract top talent and build a team that's truly exceptional. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/greatness. That's linkedin.com/greatness to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. This episode is brought to you by Shopify. In the world of successful partnerships, names like Procter & Gamble, Ben & Jerry, and Supply & Demand echo through business history. But when it comes to growing your business, who are the perfect partners? That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. We're talking from launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to did we hit $1 million order stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Picture this, a time when my business was facing a tough hurdle and I wasn't sure how to break through. But then came the breakthrough moment, a game changer that took my business to the next level. You know, what I absolutely adore about Shopify is its unparalleled ability to adapt and grow with your ambitions. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 75 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Darius, all lowercase. That's D-A-R-I-U-S. Go to shopify.com/Darius now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/Darius.
So having coached thousands of people, you know, north of just, you know, almost under 10,000, over 5,000, you noticed that people came alive when they were doing, talking about purpose and passion. And, you know, when we talk about Ikigai, pulled up an Ikigai chart, it's what you love, what the world needs, what you can be paid for, and what you're good at, right? So these are these like intrinsic things that make us feel like we live a life of purpose, right?
Well, so let me hop in right there. Sorry to interrupt. But that four circle Venn diagram is an incorrect interpretation.
Oh, it is.
So let's talk about that. But yeah, sorry to interrupt your flow.
Okay, so before we go into my question, what is is that like the Western bastardization of what Ikigai really means?
yeah, basically it is. So another touch point on Ikigai, it's 1,000 years old, but it came to the Western world in 2004 when Dan Buettner wrote a book called Blue Zones, right, where he identified where do people live longest in the world. Found five places. One of those five was in Okinawa, where women live longest in the world. And he found, you know, these centenarians and these super centenarians talking about their Ikigai. And so he placed that into the book in, I think, 2016, 15. That four circle Venn diagram was created by a designer, I think in the Toronto newspaper. And it just caught fire. So the disconnect is what you can get paid to do, right? Because your purpose doesn't necessarily need to translate into dollars, at least not in terms of Ikigai. And that's brought to life through these 105-year-old women, in many cases, that Buettner was interviewing that are referencing their Ikigai. They weren't saying what I did for a job 50 years ago. They definitely didn't have a job at that time. So it's more, and that's kind of right at the base foundation of what we focus on and bringing the whole human to, you know, into life, but in particular into the workplace.
Okay. Gotcha. So we're going to take away the, what you can be paid for, because that some marketer figured out this is how I get people to really pay attention. Right. Yeah. But at a higher level, it's, you know, what do you love, what the world needs, what are you good at, you know, what brings purpose and passion to you? Is that more of a better description of Ikigai then?
Yeah. I mean, I think of it as like the moment, like right now I'm living my Ikigai. I'm aligning my actions with my priorities. I'm having a great conversation with Darius. So it can often be like this destined, I think of it as a verb. It's more of a verb than it is a noun.
Oh, interesting. So okay.
It's like so, in the moment at the time, being present.
I'm doing some Ikigai right now. So when I'm playing backgammon and listening to books, I'm in full Ikigai mode, just crushing it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love that. You know, Steve Kotler probably would say that that's like you're in flow. When you're in flow, there's an Ikigai, right? So right. Time stands still. You're present. You're when I play ukulele, I'm in Ikigai. So, okay, I got it. So it's like the in being very present, because you're there. You're alive. You're in the moment.
Right.
So what's funny is, let's take this idea of Ikigai, now that we've, you know, described it well enough for any listener to understand it. And let's go back to your position where you're training all these people in the financial services space. You're getting them to get into Ikigai, you know, to get into this Ikigai state, you know, training them to live more life in that way, through their work while they're interacting with each other, through leadership development. And then we go and we look and it's like, yeah. But what's the bottom line, right? And what I found was there is this tension in business which is, I have a mentor named Rand Stegen that calls it long-termism versus short-termism, where we live in a world where stocks are transparently priced every single second. Yep. You know, businesses are managed quarter by quarter. Sometimes they're making decisions based on what's good for the quarter, not good for the long term. And I'm guessing some of the interactions you had that were out of alignment with maybe people living their purpose and being, you know, they're bringing them full selves to the job, didn't necessarily translate into top line revenue at that moment, and or at without the expense, a cost of creating long term benefit. So what is your perspective around this? Because I know there's a lot of data out there that supports investing in the long term, but we live in a world of short termism.
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of sequencing, my path to Ikigai came about 2 years after I left financial services. So I was feeling that void without having the ability to put a finger on what is this void. So I think the response to your question, a couple things come to mind. So the first is that 84% of the value in the S&P 500 is human capital. So the SEC did an audit, I think in 2015, because one of the key principles of the SEC is about investor transparency. So when the SEC was formed in 1933-34, it was about transparency because there was a lot of snake oil back then. So essentially it said you have to provide transparency into your books, but back then everything was physical goods. Right. So it's like human capital was a small percentage of the total value of the companies back in 33-34. You fast forward roughly 80 years later, 90 years later, whatever that math is. And now it's all human capital. So, or the majority of it's human capital. And so if you think about that stat, people driven businesses these days. And then you think of the stat that one out of three employees in the United States are engaged in the workplace. Numbers even lower globally. That just doesn't pencil, right? So I think there are trends that you're seeing with like the Business Roundtable, right, that came out in 2019 and kind of made this shift toward the purpose of a company is more than just maximize shareholder value. It was about stakeholder value.
Right.
I think that was a key point in kind of this shift. It's not a, you know, it's not a student body left type of shift, but it is a signal that we're moving toward an environment where well-being of the employees needs to be recognized and improved in order for more sustainable businesses to survive, right? Like sustainability and human sustainability, employee sustainability, and business sustainability are more directly correlated than ever before.
So touching on that, for listeners that aren't clear on what you just said, what is the difference between a shareholder and a stakeholder? Because I'm a trained conscious capitalist. You're speaking my language. I know what you meant. But when we talk about moving from a shareholder quarter by quarter, you know, economy, which is, you know, which I would say is dominantly what we are right now, moving into this more of a stakeholder economy, what does that mean? What's the difference between a shareholder and a stakeholder, and what does that look like?
Yeah, great question. So if anyone's interested, just a quick Google search on purpose of a corporation, Business Roundtable should give you some context. Shareholder is maximizing investor dollar, right? So regardless of whether you pillaged the earth, take advantage of your employees, if you are getting another nickel out of that effort, then you're maximizing shareholder dollars. So there's a lot of kind of the potential for bad actors in that type of environment. I think we've seen that there's a long list of case studies there. Stakeholder, in particular, in the Business Roundtable statement, which is a very simple, concise statement. I think it's like 250 words. It's pretty short and sweet. They reference employees. They reference the environment. They reference the communities. They even go as far as referencing vendors that support the business. And so it's this recognition that, you know, there is this interlinked connectedness into the business ecosystem. And, you know, we've seen some of that within the last 3 years. You could talk about supply chain, or you could talk about COVID. There's a lot of things you can talk about. When one of those things starts to break down, it has a ripple effect, a contagion, if you will. So I think stakeholder is holistic. Shareholder is just the people who've invested.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with the samples. Hey there, friends. It's Darius from Shazda here, and I have a little confession to make. You see, I've been battling allergies for years now. And let me tell you, they've been a real ordeal in my life. Allergies have been my constant companion. They stop me from fully enjoying the little things in life, canceling plans with friends because of sudden allergy attack, to missing out on an outdoor activity because of sneezing fits. Allergies have been a real nuisance. Luckily, for those of us who live with symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing and a runny nose, itchy, watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. I've been a Claritin D user for many, many years now, and let me tell you, it's made a world of difference. Since I started using Claritin D, my symptoms have improved dramatically. Now I can breathe easier, enjoy outdoor activities without worrying about sneezing fits, and truly live my life without being held back by allergies. Ready to live as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter now. You don't even need a prescription. Go to ClaritinD.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear, use as directed. What's up, TGMers? JustWorks supports small businesses with simple, seamless solutions like integrated payroll. Now, for a limited time only, try out their payroll plan for 1 month for free. As a reliable and flexible platform, JustWorks earns back time so you can focus on running your small business with big confidence. Running a business is demanding. And look, we've all been there. You know, you're juggling countless tasks and responsibilities every single day. That's why when it comes to managing payroll, you need a solution that streamlines the process so you can focus on what really matters, growing your business. Experience the relief of streamlined payroll management with their comprehensive solution. From automated payments to accurate tax calculations and seamless withholdings, JustWorks got you covered. Plus, their expert support ensures you have the assistance every single step of the way. And here's the best part. There's no hidden fees. Designed to be flexible, JustWorks can support teams of one to as many as your small business hires, including contractors. In just 30 minutes, set up a payroll that streamlines paying your team, saves time, mitigates errors, and is a desktop and mobile friendly. You can even integrate time tracking and benefits that support running your small business with big confidence. Don't miss your chance to get 1 month free by visiting justworks.com/greatness. Secure the limited time offer and start letting JustWorks run your payroll so you don't have to. Start your free month now at justworks.com/greatness.
So I'd love to, I want to challenge that against something that recently just happened. So what's the let me pull up this guy's name so I don't butcher it. Sam Bankman-Fried. Is that, am I pronouncing his name? Like, so we got this. Yeah. So anyone that's halfway literate who's on the internet has reading about this, and this dude who I think is MIT grad or something like that. And he's just, I mean, he was just, everyone's just been talking game on him, kind of like the girl from Theranos. Like how brilliant they are. They're late 20s. They're just multi-billion-dollar business. And then within a span of a week, the company goes from $32 billion net worth to freaking zero. Yeah. Talk about, like, when you think of stakeholder versus shareholder, you know, and you look at FTX and what Sam Bankman-Fried just did, like, what thoughts come to mind for you?
Oh, man, that's a big question. So I should disclose, I don't know as much about this guy and what has happened at FTX. My guess, based on a couple headlines and tweets that I've read, is that hubris and conviction in an unproven system caught up with him. And, you know, I don't know if it was a Ponzi scheme. I don't know enough about it, but I've seen some parallels made with Madoff.
Right.
Right. And how, you know, he was just trying to outrun it and eventually thought that he would get right size once he outran it. So I don't know enough about that. The connection to shareholder versus stakeholder, not sure. I mean, I love your take on it. What do you have a perspective on?
You know, my perspective, you know, and I apologize for putting you on the spot. My perspective is that, you know, let's say he did it unintentionally, then maybe there is no connection. But yeah. I believe that when you're the CEO, you own the strategy, you own the bench, you own the culture. So whether it was him or it was just a massive mistake. But when I read that, when I start reading in and digging in, they're like, yeah, this guy was taking people's money and trading with it when he wasn't supposed to. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's just assume that's true.
Yeah.
I do know one truth. The company was worth $32 billion and now it's worth zero. And that happened within right. like the time it took for me to take my kid to school and come home. Okay.
Right.
So yeah. within a week, the guy lost, you know, $32 billion of enterprise value and billions of people's hard earned money they put entrusted in his system. Right. right. So from yeah. my seat, if I was Darius Bankman-Fried, you know, like that just wouldn't have happened. Right. Like yeah. unless someone did it, unless someone stole from my, and I would have taken ownership of that saying I didn't build a system that protected my people well enough. But let's assume what happened was the truth. That this dude was like, yeah, we own all these companies. One of them's Alameda Labs or whatever, and that's our trading arm. And there's a Chinese wall. I don't know anything that's going on over there, but I'm taking people's money and trading it over there when I'm not supposed to. Yeah. That's greed, to your point. It's hubris. I don't even know if it's shareholder. I don't even know if it's shareholder. I think that's just straight up fraud. But it sure yeah. as hell is not stakeholder. I am not caring right. about the people who entrusted me. All I care about is looking good. All I care about is getting another Tom Brady to sponsor my business, or, you know, all the different folks that backed him. I want my name on another building. Yeah, I think that that's at best shareholder. You know, if he's trying to protect the shareholders' short-term value, maybe that's at best. I think yeah. at worst, it's him completely disregarding every stakeholder and only caring about himself and his business.
Absolutely. Totally. I mean, another part of this is that he had no board, right? I'm pretty sure there was no board. So in terms of like governance and a structure, even the shareholder, if he had a board that he had to report to, his, you know, his ability to kind of go wild west on all these things probably, maybe, would have been limited. So I agree with you 100%. It was very self-centered, very selfish. But also in terms of maximizing shareholder value, you know, the venture arms that supported this guy didn't put the right protections in place to protect their interests, which is mind blowing to me. I can't believe he got billions of dollars and there is no governance on at a minimum having a board, let alone who knows what else.
Yeah. It just shows you, I think that when we, and this kind of, I think that in of itself is the difference between a stakeholder versus shareholder mentality, right? Because greed, which is more of the shareholder, like got to maximize the opportunity. We're going to give this guy money because he's got the Midas touch. That is a shareholder mentality, right? Like right. I want my money to be worth more, right? At yeah. whatever stake. Oh, no governance. He's managing this from the Bahamas, even though he's not from Bahamas. Like that right there is like kind of a red flag for me personally. You know, I'm like, wait, what do you mean he lives in the Bahamas? Is his mom Bahamian? Is he, did he grow up an island boy? Oh no, he's from fucking Vermont. You know, he's just trying to skirt laws to do his thing. Right. So, right. you know, like, listen, I appreciate the like libertarian mindset around it to a point, but I do think that at the end of the day, and listen, you're talking to someone that is a hardcore stakeholder person. Like I'm like, hey, is there a profit that's being created that's creating future liability that someone's paying for at some point that you don't even know about? And guess what? It's your job to know it if you're yeah. creating it. So, you know, what I'd love to hear your take on this, because as you transitioned, you know, and I guess going back to my original question, when you started looking at these companies they said, great. We want you to develop our people, but whoa. We got to hit our numbers, bottom line, you know, yeah, we care though we don't care. You know, was that like, what really took you from being this person that was in the financial services space, you know, devoting yourself to leveling up leaders to then saying, whoa, I want to go do this other thing. Were you disenfranchised by what you were seeing?
A little bit. I mean, it was personal. So there was this moment where I went to a conference, an industry conference in Manhattan. So I walked into this big ballroom with, you know, 500-600 financial professionals for a conference and experienced an amygdala hijack. So like, as I walked in there, I was feeling these, like this disconnect and like this empty hollow, like what's the purpose of this? So there was part of that, but I had a great team. I had great clients. There was like things were, a lot of things on paper were great. But when I walked into that room, something was off. I took a picture of that room and sent that picture to myself that said the exact opposite of this. And so that was, that's just captured how I was feeling at that point on February 9th of 2017. The next day, there was this ethics professor that started his presentation off telling this story about a greyhound dog and about how the meaning of life and just all these things that were connecting with that feeling that I had on the inside. And that was it. I planted the flag and said, I'm making this change. So for me, it was about reinventing. I've done a lot of research into midlife, right? Like if you look at, it's empirical evidence that everywhere around the world, including even in primates, that life satisfaction dips at the midpoint of life. And in some areas of the world, it dips a little bit harder. The slope's different, but everywhere in the world that happens. And so you start to look at that. And I think, you know, before when I left, that was kind of the punchline. You know, it's, oh, it's a midlife thing. Ha ha ha. But then as I got further distance from it and started to reflect back, there was some element of that that had a lot of truth to it. When I initially left my last day or my first day out as an entrepreneur, I put a post out on LinkedIn that said, fear of regret is greater than the comfort of inertia. And that just captured how I was feeling, like this regret of, if I don't plant a flag and do something relative to this void, then the fear of that regret is overwhelmed my comfort with just kind of checking the box and checking the box and checking the box. But I'll say it's not an easy road, right? It's not, as you know, it's on the outside looking in, it's always easier. And then you get into it and it's got some bumps to it. It's got a lot of
I love that, man. The fear of regret is not better than the comfort of inertia.
Greater than
the fear of regret is greater than the comfort of inertia. Wow. You just, my amygdala just blew up. that's a really interesting statement. So you're in that room, you're looking around, you're like, not me, I'm done.
Well, actually, so, you know, I've done some reflection on what was it in that room. And a couple of years after the fact, I realized there's nothing about that room. I should have taken a selfie. It was about me. It was about how I was showing up in the world, not about what that room, anything about that room. But that took some work, man. I mean, it was a lot of pointing the finger, like the industry and all these other things. And then realizing, hey, I've got some agency. I've got some control. Instead of complaining about it, I got to take action on it.
So you don't know this, but 3 years and 2 days ago was the day I quit my job as CEO of The Money Source. Same thing. Like I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I won't speak for myself just yet. I want to ask you a question. Were you freaked out? Were you scared when you pulled the trigger?
Unfortunately I wasn't. I maybe it's the hubris side. I don't know if it was the hubris or I was just, you talk about flow state. Like I was full on flow state. I had built up some resources to explore. I expected to turn the corner a lot quicker than I did. And then making a pivot toward Ikigai stretched things even further out. But like that was this, you know, this calling where I felt compelled to do it. So I wasn't scared at the time, but I recall one friend in particular was really worried about me and asking over and over, like, dude, are you okay? Well, I'm worried that how are you going to make this work? And you got kids. And I was just like, dude, it's fine. It's going to be all good. It's fine. So it was this belief and this, you know, this faith that it's going to pencil out. But in hindsight, I would have done the same thing. There's a lot of learning lessons in that.
Sure.
But there's easier ways to do it. So was
that your first time as an entrepreneur, by the way?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Oh shit. Had you and I met that the day before you did that, I'm like, hey bro, this is gonna take twice as long. It's gonna cost twice as much as you think. Like, and you're going to, and your Hubris would have been like, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And I'm like, write this down and show it to yourself. What year is this? When did this happen for you?
2017.
I'd have been like, listen, 2019-ish, 20? Read what's on this paper. Don't read it till then. Put it in an envelope. You're not allowed to read it. But whatever that says will have happened.
That's money. That would have been right. So how about you? You're starting to go down this path. How about you? What was that inner feeling?
Yeah, you know, I just couldn't be there anymore. I was just done. I was over it. So for me, my situation was probably more unique than most people's, but in 2018, I turned 40. So this is the same deal, right? This is kind of a midlife transition. Chip Conley, who runs the Modern Elders Academy, who is a former guest on the show, he talks about this, right? That there's these different stages of midlife. Midlife is this really transformational. I had a business coach who's actually coming here to present to my mastermind in 2 days, who said, you know, there's this moment from age like 38 to like 46, 44, everyone's a little different, where you awaken and you're either like are on the right path or you need to reassess onto the right path, or you just go back to sleep and stay on your current path. And so when I was 38, 39 was when it kind of, I had this moment. And for me, it was like, oh, I felt like something was missing in my life. And then that whisper became a scream. And then I pulled the trigger when the scream was unbearable. And then I thought I had some relief, but then it got really, really like, I really had a tough time for a minute there. And then it was like open pastures. And I've had this kind of creative revolution over the last, this was probably what, 3 years ago. So I've never been more creative than I have been in the last 4 years of my life. I'm still like trying to figure out, like, find my footing, because there's stuff that I did before that I loved that like I lost in the process, where I'm like, no, I like that. Like, I like doing deals. I like, you know, getting in brawls with investment bankers. I miss tasting the blood on my lip when I get socked in the face. So there's a warrior side of me that's like, yeah, not all of it was so bad, but so now I'm kind of revisiting it. I'm going back and I'm saying, all right, not all of it was bad. Because creativity, just for the sake of creativity, is fun until it kind of gets old. And then you're like, at least I felt that way, because I wanted, like, I like building big things. And I'm like, this is like, I don't know. It's like, listen, if you tell me I'm eating omakase every single day for the rest of my life, I probably won't like omakase 90 days in. Right. Yeah. Omakase is fucking amazing. Like, especially if it's like a really good chef, you know, but day 91 of omakase is like, I just want a burger.
right.
So yeah. I'm kind of there right now. I've had a lot of omakase and I'm like, yeah, I just want like a ham sandwich. Like, just give me. So I think there's balance between a lot of this like feel good stuff and also like what are other things that charge you? It's complicated, to your point. But for me, I've kind of figured out that where I landed on this was I'm 60% like warrior business person, 40% artist. And my former life, I was 100% business, 0% artist, and that wasn't enough. And when I went to like 80% artist, that was too much. So I had to kind of find that kind of, you know, balance, if you will. What do you think about that?
I love that, man. So do you think about that as right brain, left brain?
Yeah, I've always been right brain, left brain. But I was really not giving enough to my right. Right brain is the creative, right?
Yeah.
The other way.
Yeah.
I think right brain's creative, left brain is logical. Yeah. I'm a right brain, left brain person big time. Like, I'd kind of float between the two. And so for me, it was all left brain, just nonstop. And I just wasn't putting water on the flowers of the right brain. And then, and it was interesting. I read the book Ikigai this year. And that was the first book I finished this year. Number 27, I finished last night, which is a book about Ice-T and his childhood partner that went to prison for like 35 years. Really good book. I forget the name of it, but Ikigai was a cool book. Like, you know, I was thinking about it, like, how do you live in this life where you build community and you're doing things that are purposeful and enjoyable and you're present? And for me, I went from like being, I had no hobbies, not present, to fully focused on business, to now it's like, I play ukulele. I play backgammon. I read books. I do podcasting. I have all these hobbies that I love, but the warrior in me is like, all right, bro, you can have some of that. But
like, don't forget about me.
Yeah, we need to go in the octagon and knock some shit out.
I love it, man. I love it. There's something that you referenced that reminded me of a mentor of mine who talks about 7-year cycles. Like every 7 years, we kind of go from birth until death. Every 7 years, you go through this change. And so he's like, at 7 years old, you're getting new teeth so you can eat different food. At 14 years old, you're going through adolescence. At 21 years old, you know, you're an adult. 28 years old, you're trying to find a partner. 35 years old, you start to tip into this midlife thing, right? So there's just all these sequences and stages throughout life that that I think have a lot of truth to it. If you talk to a 77 year old and my math isn't working real well right now, 100 year old, whatever that is around, I think you probably find, you know, these different shades of insight and probably like awakening wisdom, right? Like I think Chip Conley talks a lot about wisdom.
Yeah. You know, there's a book called Die with Zero by Bill Perkins. It's a cool book. But he talks about that through life, we have many deaths, right? And like, there's these different moments where things die that you never get to do them again. Like, you know, good examples of kids. Like I'll never get to have it like stay up for 3 years straight and not sleep because my kids don't sleep. Right. Yeah. When they're born. Yeah. And then you get to the point where, you know, I'll never get to like take my kids to kindergarten again. So he's like, we live through all these different phases and deaths. So it is interesting. I think midlife's an interesting point when I think you're at like the halfway mark, right? I say like, you know, you finished the first 9 on the golf course. You're on the back 9 now. Right. If you're like in the 40s and you're like, all right, like let's say I make it to 100 years old, which at this day and age means you're outliving most people. Mm. You know, those last 20 years aren't super productive, probably 10 years, whatever, right. You know, unless you're like Charlie Munger. And so you're like, hey man, I got like 30 years left to go fucking kill it. And crush it, and like really make shit happen. So I do think that time becomes a little more scarce, which brings about this moment of reflection. You know, going back to yourself, you know, you had that moment, you went into this like creative renaissance for yourself, and out of that, you said you did a lot of experimentation. From that was born this idea of the new platform, the new business, the Chief Ikigai Officer of Connect 3X. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. Absolutely. So our tagline it really captures it. Capitalize the human experience. So we're trying to say human capital in its old form needs to evolve. We need to find ways to bring the whole human into the workplace. What that looks like in terms of deliverables are a personalized well-being system that really is focused in particular on the team. All right. So how do you support a manager and a team to improve the well-being, because 70% of the variance in employee engagement is the manager. So people join companies, they leave managers. And that manager typically is kind of at a stage in life that we're talking about, right? They've got a lot of pressures in the workplace. They also have a lot of pressures at home. And in many cases, these managers just kind of tenured into that role. They were like, just stayed long enough that they became a manager. And I was like, well, you know, that person's been here for 15 years, so it's time for them to be a manager, but they don't want to be a manager and they're not equipped with the tools or the skills. So we focus on team well-being. We bring that to life through coaching and facilitation with Gallup Certified Strengths Coaches. And then we have a platform that provides programming, systems-based programming that's designed to slightly, ever so slightly, improve the well-being over time. And so what that would look like, for an example, we talk a lot about ROE, return on energy. How do you find these micro moments throughout the course of a workday where just a subtle nudge, a subtle science-backed experience can help take a day that's moving like this, or even worse, moving like this, and that can start to bring it into a better state, an improved state. So we have a curated group of experts called the Purpose Partners, which are well-being experts that sit across 6 dimensions of well-being, everything from registered dietitian nutritionists to integral health to mind-body, parenting coaches, et cetera. that provide the programming on this platform that's really engineered within this ecosystem to, you know, 1% better, 1% better, while also supporting the manager who's taxed with a lot of responsibility, personally and professionally.
I love it, man. So leaning into that, because I think a lot, and I think this is where the bridge we need, the gap, or what is it, the gap we need to bridge between this like financial based outcome model, this KPI driven business around like, what's my, you had said ROE, right? Return on energy. Then I wrote the question. Now I said, well, how do you quantify ROI on the ROE? Because I think that any real business, there are, I do agree that we are moving into this world where people are, it doesn't need to be as obvious as before. I think the data, to your point, supports that when we look at Gallup's data, for instance, State of American Managers, State of American Workplace, 30% of the team's engaged. I think if internationally, that's 18%, you know, which means the other 70% is either actively disengaged and or doesn't give it, you know, like they're kind of like in the middle, right? Yeah. So we know that the data says, and every industry is different. You go into a more volatile cyclical industry, some of this stuff doesn't help as much because they're, the ground's moving around too much, like oil and gas or mortgage where I came from. It only works until the ground moves and then everyone's like in shambles. But in general, most industries aren't as cyclical. Most aren't as volatile. So when we want to say like, okay, great, I'm going to go invest in this platform. I'm going to go invest in my people. I'm going to go invest in this manager through it, through this, you know, these micro, you know, 1% per day investments. How do I measure an ROI on that? What are you guys doing to help quantify that so that businesses say, yeah, I'm all over that?
Yeah. Yeah. So at a very straightforward, simple response is we go to organizations and we say, within this business unit, within this team, what's the KPI from which you measure success? So probably the easiest example is a sales team, right? And so we'll say, well, what are your degrees of success for that sales team? They've got their number. If you get here, that's great. If you get here, that's good. If you get here, that's okay. And if you get here, there's problems. So we anchor on the KPI from which they're measured. And then in a very succinct way, the claim that we're bringing to the marketplace is, if you improve the well-being of those people, that outcome's going to get better. All right. So we have case studies that are underway currently where we're measuring that KPI for that organization or for that team. It's probably a better example for that team. And then Connect3X stands for connect with self, connect with peers, connect with experts. All right. So I mentioned the experts part with the purpose partners. Mentioned a little bit about the connect with self, right? Strengths-based positive psychology, values, introspection. And then the connect with peers is kind of this untapped opportunity where when you can bring people together, and it's especially challenging now with hybrid, remote, wherever we're at, every organization's trying to figure it out. It's really hard to foster belonging and relationships in any environment right now, right? So if the business acknowledges that's a key challenge that we're trying to tackle, and they're willing to make the space somewhere in the workday, somewhere in a week or a monthly basis, that we're going to carve out this space so our people can connect with themselves and then connect with their peers on something that's not the X's and O's of running the business, that will improve outcomes, whether it's best practice sharing, whether it's this, I'm in marketing, you're in sales, we have to work together, but I didn't know that you had this podcast. I didn't know that you know, all these things, that just creates, you know, it strengthens the foundation of the relationship. So I was going to try to use an analogy there about the brain, but I lost that analogy.
Yeah. No. Can I ask a question though? When we say better, and this is the business, like ground and pounder and me coming out. Better could be like 0.1%. That's better, but it's not anything like that's worth the time or the investment. When we start to look at benchmarking for better, you know, what is it that you're gunning for? Is it like, you know, and obviously in every part of the business, you know, it might be different. If I can make 1% more profit, that in a billion-dollar business, that's meaningful, right? If I'm moving the needle on McDonald's, like 1%, that's like earth shattering, right? If I'm moving 1% in a $1 million business, like who cares? So, so are you guys saying, hey, we think we can increase productivity by, let's use Gallup metrics and say productivity increases from an engaged workforce should be 22% higher. That's at least what Gallup says, right? Mm-hmm. So are you guys trying to like benchmark against Gallup data or any of these, you know, McKinsey or Bain against what an engaged team, what a more fulfilled team should produce? Like, give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. So what I've learned is, this is just my lived experience, whether it's right or wrong, it's my view on it. Those engagement scores are important, but I think when you get to the higher levels of the organization, you always run into that steely-eyed CFO with their arms crossed that doesn't care. What's the bottom line? How does this create, you know, bottom line results? And so that took some at-bats for us to learn. We need to reverse engineer this and first start with the outcome and then work our way down from that outcome to building the right ecosystem and systems that can support that outcome. So engagement's important. It's clearly, you know, I always say engagement is the engine that drives business. Well-being is a fuel. It's not my, I grabbed that from somebody, but I think it's really succinct and it really captures this notion of the importance of engagement. But, you know, back to the question, if we stay on that sales example, like our goal is to help year over year, we establish a baseline and our goal is to increase a substantial amount year over year over that baseline. And really the two key...
Are you making... Well, let me ask a question though. Yeah, are you having your partners, you're saying, all right, you tell us what you want to do and we'll build the plan to get you there from a pouring into your people perspective. And then you guys kind of come to some agreements like, hey, goal is to increase sales by 13%. It's like, all right, well, we're going to go and pour into your team as individuals, as a, you know, team members, all these three different ways that, you know, Connect3x works. And we believe that by doing X, Y, and Z, you will have a more superpowered team that's showing up and doing their best work, which should create that 13% outcome.
For the most part, correct. Yeah. I think the two touch points there are, one is if a salesperson they're measured on activity and conversion kind of leads toward the sale. Well, if you can help them improve their activity because they have more energy, that's a good thing. And if they have more confidence because their mindset has shifted, or if connected with peers to learn a new sales style, a new approach, whatever, if you can create those types of environments, then energy goes up, confidence and conversion goes up. So that's the kind of, you know, the KPIs that lead into the ultimate KPI. In terms of the system, I think the best way to describe the system is just a personalized system. So there are components to that system that are anchor components. And when the manager says, this is the KPI, this is how the state of my team, we're highly engaged or we're not engaged, or we have these kind of the qualitative elements of that. And then we go to the team and say, hey, team, what are you interested in terms of well-being solutions? The combination of those two then drops into the black box, and the black box comes back with, here's a system that we think you should implement in order to improve the culture of the organization, which the byproduct of that will be lead toward better sales outcomes in this example.
Nice. So we're coming here to the last 5 minutes of the show. I have two quick questions. So one is this is a software system platform, I take it. Is that correct? Or is this a consulting practice or combination?
Yeah, it's a software. It's a little bit of both right now. We're building it toward a SaaS model.
Okay. So, if people that want to learn more about this, what's the best way for them to connect with you guys to, you know, become a part of your ecosystem and roll this type of thing out in their business?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that. Two ways. One is you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. So Sam Ushio, USHIO at LinkedIn, or on LinkedIn, or you can email info@connect3x.
Okay. So we'll make sure to put that in the show notes as well. I wanted to save our last couple minutes for a question. I decided to start asking every guest the same question to end the show. And you know, I believe greatness is a process. And I believe that a lot of times we create these artificial barriers to create greatness. And my question for you is, what barriers have you experienced in your life that have stopped that you've had to overcome to create greatness in your life, and how did you do it? So what barriers have you had to overcome to create greatness in your life, and how have you done it?
You know, this is going to feel like a overly philosophical response, but I think, you know, it's the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? So greatness, I think, is subjective to the person. And the barrier is also subject to the person. So, you know, philosophically, I think everyone's already sitting on greatness. I think they have it. They have it at their disposal. It's not a matter of finding it. It's a matter of peeling it out or allowing it to shine, right? And so the biggest barrier that we face is usually ourself. It's imposter syndrome, or it's a mindset. It's a belief system that just doesn't fuel us. It doesn't give us what we need. So that's the philosophical. In terms of more tactical, like lived experience stuff, I think I was referencing it before, you know, core values, my three are curiosity, creativity, and courage. And for the longest time, curiosity and creativity were in the driver's seat. It was like, hey, I'm super interested in learning about this, and oh, I'm going to put something together with it, and I'll put it on the whiteboard, and maybe if someone asks about this random creative thing, I'll talk about it, never having the courage to like plant a flag and saying, this is it. And I'm going to subject myself to judgment and probably failure. I think if I would have had that courage to do that earlier, I could have learned quicker. But there's also value in the journey, right? So I think that's kind of how that question hits me.
I love it, man. Thank you so much. That was just a wisdom bomb and then some. And I really do. I sincerely appreciate kind of where you came from with it, man. I could do another hour with you. We didn't even talk about StrengthFinder, which is a mutual love of ours, amongst values and other things. I know you touched on a little bit, but Sam, thank you so much for coming on the show, my friend. I'm really excited for the platform you're building, all the things, all the greatness you're creating in the world. And again, we have ways for people to connect with you on the show, connect with Sam on LinkedIn, info@connect3x.com, anywhere else that would be best for you, or are those two good?
Connect3x.com, our website too. You can check us out there.
Cool. Thank you so much, my friend. I appreciate you coming on the show today.
All right. Thanks, Darius. Appreciate you.
Yeah. Hey, listen, everyone, you got to go check out what Sam's doing. Go check out the website. If you're a business owner, check out the platform. It's badass. I was so excited when Sam showed it to me. If this show brought you value, or anyone you know might bring them value, which it should, because we're talking about Ikigai and tons of awesome stuff, please share it. Please review it. And leaders are givers. Give the knowledge to someone else. With that said, we love you. Peace out. Take care, everybody.
You are listening to The Greatness Machine, and that's a wrap for today. Listen, if you love what you heard, subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform that you're tuning in on so that you don't miss any of our future episodes. We have tons of great people coming on, and we're stoked to have you here to enjoy it with us. Leave us a review. Tell us what you love most about this particular episode. We love getting the reviews. We love to see what you guys love most. And if this particular episode, you know, made you think of someone who's leveling up in their business and in their life, print screen, share it with them. Leaders are the best givers. And after all, we're all here to support and grow with each other. And in case you want to see some of the fun behind the scenes shots or some of the things that we're doing, I'm actually writing about this in my weekly newsletter. Go to www.therealdarius.com and subscribe to my newsletter. We're talking about fun things like business and life and mindfulness and cryptocurrencies and gosh, I don't even know, everything and anything, but it's tons of fun stuff I write about. I try to get it out on a weekly basis. You can subscribe at www.therealdarius.com. And with that said, look, thank you guys so much. I appreciate you. I love you. Peace. We're out of here. See you guys on the next one. She's my lover.
Hey there, what's up, everybody? Darius here, and I'm here to tell you about my main man, Robert Glazer, and his amazing show, The Elevate Podcast.
Robert is a buddy of mine, and his Elevate podcast is second to none. So the Elevate podcast, what is it? It's a conversational show where Robert sits down with world-class CEOs, New York Times best-selling authors, and the best thought leaders and performers in their field. You're going to hear stories about triumph, failure, resilience, more importantly, all the learnings along the way. So some of his guests include James Clear from Atomic Habits, Angela Duckworth from Grit, Susan Cain, author of Quiet, Morning Brew founder and CEO Alex Lieberman, and hundreds more. Every episode shares valuable insights in how to expand your capabilities as a leader and align your life and work to your most important principles. Robert's goal is that you're going to leave each episode inspired and with plenty of next steps that you can put into practice into your life. And look, if you're looking to elevate your life, your leadership, and your business, Elevate is the show for you. It's like I always say, we as podcast listeners, we listen to 6 shows, not just mine, but Bob should be one of yours. Subscribe to the Elevate podcast today on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Check it out.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap, Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.